man. Short guy. Hi, my name's Eric Lyle. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date, September 18th, 1985. And I got a sponsor and I got a home group. And I've had a sponsor from about the fifth day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy offered to sponsor me, and I've never been sponsorless since that point. I'm on my fourth sponsor now. You know, my original sponsor took me through the steps, moved away, and I lost contact with him probably 15, 20 years ago. I don't know if he's sober or not. I think he probably is, though. But I've always had a sponsor. And the guy that sponsored me the longest took a position out of town about 5 years ago, and this is relevant, I think, to what I'm going to talk about today. By the time I asked him to sponsor me, you know, I had been through the steps and was living 10, 11, and 12, and he moved into town for a job, and my sponsor at the time had moved out of town for a job, and I saw this guy, and I liked what he said one night. It was 10th and Powell, actually, and after the meeting, I says, hey, man, I need a sponsor. This is the deal. You know, I've been through the steps. I've been sober, blah, blah, blah. And he says, yeah, I'll take you on. We became really, really close friends, and, you know, for 15 years, and we still talk a couple times a month. You know, he's a good dude, and he's a big part of my life. But sponsorship to me is vital, you know, being sponsored into this fellowship and carrying that message to the newcomer. Last week, I qualified a little bit, and I'm not going to do that tonight other than there's a couple people maybe that weren't here. You know, I took my first drink at 11 years old, and I took my last drink shortly after I turned 23. And, you know, I was at that jumping off point in 11 or 12 years of drinking and doing whatever else was going on at the time. And I only had a couple options left. And, you know, killing myself was one of those. So that's how I showed up in AA. And, you know, I went through the book, read through it, worked through the first step with my sponsor, and I readily conceded, you know, that I was alcoholic, that I had this thing. And I understood what the first step was about. So we started reading the chapters with the second and third step in, and all this time I was really balking at the God angle. I did not want it to be anything but a spiritual solution, you know, and so I'm going to a meeting, you know, every day, you know, talking to my sponsor four times a week. It was there were not cell phones then, and it was a long distance phone call, and I was broke, so those conversations were short. They were like 5 or 10 minutes at the most, and we got together once a week, you know. And he shared his experience with me with coming to believe in a power greater than themselves, and his background as far as how he was raised in a church and stuff wasn't that dissimilar from mine. You know, I was raised with a lot of religious and moral values and tenets, and believe me, when I was out there getting loaded, I was conscious that the way I was living was not right. But, you know, I was self-will run riot as a teenager, and I was always thinking about drinking. You know, if I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking, how I'm going to get the money to drink, how am I going to continue this? And in the process, I harmed a lot of people, mainly my parents and friends and a girlfriend. But I'm not living right, and I know it, but I don't really care because I need to drink and do this other stuff I'm doing. And I really started to become very judgmental of my parents' faith and their God. And the only time I felt a connectedness to something was when we were out in the woods backpacking. We did a lot of backpacking in high school, and it was, you know, up to, almost to the time I got sober, you know, but we were always drinking, usually grain alcohol and doing some other substances out in the woods, you know, and we'd get loaded, and I'd feel this connection to something. But the moment I got back to that car and opened that door and threw that backpack in there, I was just full of fear and resentment again. It was really weird. It was like the light switch I talked about last week when I turned on my, when I took my first drink. It was like I turned on a light switch, man. I was like alcoholic. There was no social drinking, moderate drinking, heavy drinking. It was like I had an alcoholic mind from the get-go. But I had a connection to this God of my understanding, kind of, once in a while. And I tried to separate that from my parents' conception of the God of their understanding. And I know today, standing here, that that was just my ego and false pride. I did not want my parents to be right. And that was the bottom line. And that self-will and that stubbornness damn near killed me. I mean, I almost drank. And I'm going to get to that here shortly. Although we're going to try to make this a little bit longer this week so we don't have 15 minutes of silent meditation at the end. So I've kind of got this connection, and I still go to church sometimes. And I'm dating this young lady, and she kind of insisted we do that. But I do some things before church that she didn't approve of. Although it was fine after church. We'd meet up with my friends and they just left mass and we'd get loaded. Yeah, it was pretty weird. I, a couple times a year I'd show up at Easter service or Christmas Eve service, and you know, there was an Easter Sunday service where I started drinking at a keg party on Friday night, which my wife was with me, and that kind of went into Saturday afternoon and evening, and she was spent, so she went home, and a friend of mine was home from the service, and he had some hippie drugs, and I'm drunk, and I eat this stuff, and you know, I show up 8 o'clock Easter Sunday morning at the house, and Penny is very angry, and I says, I'm going to church, man, because I'm wide awake. So I went to Easter Sunday service at this evangelical church, drunk on keg beer and tripping on LSD. And I didn't think once about that how egregious that was. You know, that's just how I was. And we met my friend after he got out of mass, and we got loaded. You know, that's how I did things. But I had this, you know, there was something in the back of my head. I knew there was spirit, the universe, whatever your flavor is, there was something there, but I resisted it when I got here. And it wasn't that I didn't believe that that a power greater than myself would restore me to same thought. I just didn't want it to be God because of my parents. I did not want them to be right. And I was stubborn, and I fought that thing. You know, my sponsor, and he was very patient and tolerant with me, and I talked with some other people about it, you know. But I was not willing to make that decision and admit that this was what I needed to recover. I just didn't want to do it. So I'm going to meetings every day, and I'm working, and you know, talking to my sponsor and fellowshipping with, and there were some young people around then, and we hung out together, and some of them are grabbing a hold of this thing, they're going through the steps, you know, they're on step 4 and 5, they're writing their inventory, and I'm sitting here darker and more depressed than I was when I at the end of my drinking, and that was an observation my wife made when we were a few years sober. And so did a couple of my friends. They said, you were like really, really dark that first year. And it's because I was suffering from untreated alcoholism. You know, I was trying to do this on my will still, and it wasn't working. You know, I wasn't getting loaded, but every morning I woke up and wanted to drink and kill myself every day. And it was bad, man. It was really bad. And you know, and it's difficult, I think, for newcomers not to compare themselves to other people, especially the people that come in with them. And I happen to be married to a woman that got sober just about the same time I did. And here she is. She's got this God thing going on before she leaves treatment. You know, it's like, okay, I'm on a roll here. She's working steps with her sponsor. She's got God. She's reading spiritual literature. And You know, I'm getting up in the morning and thinking about blowing my brains out and getting loaded, you know. And it was such a contrast, and I'm looking at her thinking, what the hell's wrong with you? I mean, my sponsor's telling me that possibly it could be this God thing, you know. You need to move through this, you know. And if you don't believe it, we don't have much to offer you. I mean, it is a spiritual path. I mean, the goal of the steps is to have a spiritual awakening. The God of your understanding is going to have to be discussed, whatever that is. But there was something else here. And I realized in retrospect what it was. And it started the first meeting I went to. I was in treatment, but the first AA meeting I attended was at St. Vincent's. And a man led, his name was Jim Lafferty, he's passed. And he was dying from cancer. And he shared this. And you know, as whacked as I was, I'm like 5 days removed from a drink. But I thought, there's something here, man. There's some kind of energy here in the consciousness of these people. I mean, I recognize that. I said, I don't know what it is, but it's not bad. Because where I came from was really bad. You know, there was nothing good. There was not good energy in anything or anyone I was hanging out with and doing my thing with at all. So I recognized that. In hindsight, when I look back on that first 10 months or so, I realized that I really had started to use the consciousness of the group, which is a power greater than myself, as my first understanding of a higher power. I didn't see it then, but I was able to see that through the process of the steps. Because I knew there was something here. You know, and I'm resisting this thing that I've got this idea in my head of what it has to be. And eventually my whole idea of God and oneness has changed dramatically from the day I walked in here. But I'm doing this thing, and my sponsor is very patient, and I'm watching my wife kind of flourish and my friends start to get well, and you know, and I'm having glimpses of happiness, like for a minute or two, but by and large I was pretty miserable. And you know, we went through the holidays and it's spring, and you know, that first warm spring day, and all I can think about doing is drinking, man. You know, it's 75 degrees out, we're driving to a big book meeting on Saturday night with Bev and Dick L and Chuck S and three of us young people, and I want to drink, man, because it's warm and it's spring and it's time to drink. And I looked at them and said, are you feeling the same way? And they said, well, kind of, but, you know, we're going to go to the meeting and study the book. I'm like, yeah, okay. Because it was a little more strong for me. I'm thinking, if they're feeling the same way, I'm not so wacky, you know? I'm not so bad. But they were a little bit, but not like I was. But all through this time, I keep reading through these chapters. And you know, I certainly wasn't agnostic. You know, I felt this energy here, okay? But I was just resisting it. And I had met an old-timer. His name was Twiggy. And some of you know him, or knew him. And Twiggy was like my second father. My dad was very ill, and I knew he was going to pass in a few years. And I was able to heal that relationship and amend my harms to my father. But Twiggy was a hillbilly, man. He was a country boy. He was my folks. I grew up with people just like Twiggy. And, you know, he took a liking to me. Why, I don't know. But he kept inviting me down to his house, down to his camp, down near Sheffield. And I was resistant of that for various reasons. But it comes that spring, and you know, rolls into summer, and I'm pretty convinced that I'm going to drink. And if I drink, I'm going to kill myself. And I'm kind of semi-planning this. You know, I just needed an opportunity. And 4th of July weekend, however that played out that year, Penny had to work, and something was going on. She had work that weekend, which was unusual. She worked in a manufacturing. She was in the like data department in a manufacturing company. Anyhow, I told her Twig had invited me down to his camp, and he ripped me this crude map on a sheet of paper at a meeting, and I told her I was going to go down to Twiggy's, but my real plan was this. I loaded up my backpack, I put the shotgun in the truck, and the rainbow people were down in the Allegheny National Forest that summer, and I was going to go find the rainbow because I knew where they were camped. I had hiked up in there before. And I was going to go get loaded with these people, and when I had a plan. I was going to walk back out to my truck, and I was going to kill myself. I told her I was going to Twiggy's. Well, I'm driving down there, and I was at the jumping off point because if I veered to the left, it would go to Twiggy's camp, and I kind of knew where it was because I'd fished down there. And if I went to the right, I'd go to the rainbow people. And I went left, and I rolled into Twiggy's, and Charlie Ollenbacher was there too, and they babysat me for 3 days. I mean, literally, I told them what I was going to do. In Twiggy and Twiggy's not so subtle fashion, he says, "Son, that's a dumbass idea, but I understand why you're there." You know, you're resisting this. This steps 2 and 3. So what I did was sat there with my big book with Charlie inside at the table, and Charlie shared his experience with coming to believe in a power greater than themselves. And then I'd go out to the campfire, and Twiggy talked to me about his understanding of a higher power and how he went through this process. And I'd go back in that cabin, and Charlie'd say, "Well, what'd Twiggy tell you?" I says, "The same thing you told me, only in your own way." And you know, they both talked to me over the course of about a day and a half about their experience. They didn't tell me it had to be this God. They said, "You know, it's your own understanding of God." And I told Charlie about this energy, this consciousness thing. And he says, "Well, that can be your higher power. That's a start. You just need to believe. But you also got to understand that, you know, self-will is the root of your problem, like it's talking about in the book, in your selfishness, and that you really need to believe that this entity, this power greater than you, can remove that at some point. You know, can restore you to sane thought. That thought that I had every time I took a drink, that this time it's going to be different, or that resentment that fueled the thought I need a drink, or that fear that paralyzed me and the only way I knew to feel okay was to take a drink, this higher power was going to be able to remove that for me." You know, and Charlie talked to me about some pretty crazy stuff, and stuff that rattled around in his brain, and I totally understood Charlie, you know. And Twiggy was just this fatherly guy that had a whole lot of love inside of him for a knucklehead, because I was a knucklehead, man. And we talked and we ate and they laughed a little bit. And by that Sunday morning, I prayed for the first time that I can consciously remember, like a sincere prayer that night before. Now, I had prayed prior to this. I resented a guy I worked with when I got sober. And this is the difference between my wife and I and the God thing. This is a great illustration. I think it's kind of warped, but I worked with this older guy. He was a drunk, man. And I got sober. I couldn't stand this guy. He just was like me, you know? I did not like that. And Penny says, "Well, you know what you should do? You should pray for him every day for a month." So after a month or so, she says, "How's that resentment?" And I says, "That prayer stuff doesn't work." And she says, "What do you mean?" I says, "The dude's still alive." I'm serious. And she looks at me and says, "Why don't you try praying for his grace and peace?" I'm like, "Well, why would I want to do that? Him being alive is my problem." So that's where I was at this point, okay? So, it was weird. I was just wacky. I really was. You know, and I'm not all that far removed today, but I don't think like that quite so often, okay? You know, so they just talked to me and they loved me. That's what they did. And I know they were saying some prayers for me because they didn't know what I was going to do. They didn't know what decision I was going to make, you know? But I prayed that night, you know, and I said, whomever and whatever you are, please just remove how I'm feeling. And I got up the next day and we had breakfast and I went out fishing for a little bit. And I ended up taking a third step, what we know to be our third step. It wasn't verbatim from the book, but I took the third step along this little brook in the mountains. And, you know, that coming to believe that that insanity could be removed, I did that night before. You know, I acknowledged that there's some power greater than me. Because I know that my thinking's the problem. And I know eventually we're going to get to look at what caused that thinking, you know, the root of this. So I did step two. You know, I knew my self-will was the problem. You know, it's this stuff that I just did not want to admit. You know, and part of that was that my folks were right. And I always looked at that like they were trying to control me. They were just trying to love me and show me how to be loving and peaceful to other people. That's all they were trying to show me. My father was a very spiritual man. I mean, he was always trying to be useful to his fellows in other things. I mean, he was doing things, you know, we're real green people today. You know, my dad was green in the 50s and 60s. He was a hippie that was part of the greatest generation. I mean, he was a World War II vet. But had he been born a generation later, he would have been a hippie. You know, I mean, he was doing things that were for the greater cause than himself. And he set a wonderful example, and I never could see that till I was sober for a while. You know, so he had some spiritual beliefs and ideals, and part of what I am today is based on him and what he did. I don't think it was consciously to show me. It's just how he was. He was being loved. He was being useful, and he was being a spirit being. You know. So I take two because I know the problem. The problem's me and my thinking. You know, that was quite evident doing step one. You know, and the next day, you know, I make this decision. But the day before, so, you know, Twiggy's talking to me about this decision, you know. Making a decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God, as I understand. He says, Eric, you're going to go fishing tomorrow. When are you fishing? And I says, well, as soon as I go. And he says, no. He says, you're going to get up, you're going to get your tackle ready, you throw it in your truck, or you're going to, you know, suit up, wader up, get your vest on, get your rod, tie your fly on, you'll walk up the creek a half mile. When you cast that fly, then you're fishing. He says, up to that point, you just made a decision to go fishing. And that analogy really struck home to me, you know. I'm like, okay. So I'm making this decision. So I was acknowledging that I'm going to make this decision to concede my will and my life to this power greater than me. And that's what I did that morning, you know. And I got teary-eyed, and it was a relief because I pretty much knew I wasn't going to stick that shotgun in my mouth when I left there. You know, Penny knew nothing of this. She knew nothing about this till I got home and shared it with her. Which really kind of freaked her out, but I said, you know, how was I going to tell you that, man? You know? I just wasn't there. So I took those two steps that weekend, and that was a real change. You know, and I got home and I talked to my sponsor about it. He says, well, we got to do this inventory, but first we're going to go back through and review this stuff. And some things jumped out at me when we reread the text. And there's a couple things I want to read because, you know, where the second step is. You know, we need to ask ourselves one short question. Do I now believe, or I'm willing to believe, that there is power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. I mean, that's our second step. And when I read that with the new guy, I'm like, you just got to be willing. You know, this shows a little bit of willingness to continue with the steps. But also, in my case at least, I had to acknowledge that there's some power greater than me. Some people grab a hold of this, some people don't. I was not a quick study on this stuff, man. It took me a while. In my own hand, too. That was not about how I was sponsored or what people were telling me. You know, that was about me. You know, and then when it gets into the third step, you know, the first requirement is we are convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Well, I was able to see some of the stuff from my past that was based in selfishness. The decision that I made, the decisions that I made were almost entirely based in fear and self-centeredness up to that point. Up to including when I did my inventory, it really jumped out of me. Not leaving my wife, the alcoholic, because I knew I couldn't drink on one income. And she actually went to work just about every day. So I needed to hang around. And I'm serious when I say that, man. That was one of the reasons why I stuck around. And the other thing is, on 62, I love this couple different things here. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, that was me, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. That happened to me all the time. I got myself into a lot of jackpots and got hurt, sometimes physically. And doing inventory, I was able to see that I set that ball rolling every time. Not just sometimes, every time. I was at an ear, nose, and throat doc a couple years ago for some pretty minor, really. But he's doing this exam. He says, "When'd you break your nose?" I said, "Specifically?" He said, "Yeah, specifically." I said, "Well, that would be sometime between 1978 and 1985. And he looked at me like I had like three noses. And I'm like, "I can't tell you. It could be one of a number of times." He said, "Oh, you know, I was totally running on self-will. And I got my ass kicked a few times over it. You know, I was not a good fighter. I had a big mouth, but I was not a good fighter. You know, not at all." Yeah, it is a problem, let me tell you. In fact, my friend Tony's, you know, he was a brawler too, but he usually came out on the better end of that deal. He says, "Well, I never put the boots to you," because we ended up drinking and partying in the same places, which was kind of weird. We figured this out after we got sober. He says, "I would have remembered putting the boots to you," and I didn't. So I says, "Yeah, I probably would have remembered it too with that fro you had, man." I mean, he had this Italian afro. It freaks me out when I see the pictures. He saw the pictures of our wedding. He called me the spawn of Satan. I mean, I was loaded, and I had long hair and a beard and all this stuff. You know, on through this, though, sorry, I kind of digressed there a little bit. First of all, we have to quit playing God. Well, that one stuck out to me. You know, but further on, it says, and this is how I felt after I took step three. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, and I had a little glimpse of it that day. As we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. That really jumped out at me when I was going back through this with my sponsor after the fact. So I did this my version of the third step prayer, and it's interesting. I did a second, third step with one of my new guys last week at the house, and I said, "Well, this part is entirely up to you. We can do the third step together, or you can do it on your own." you know, this advises us to do it with somebody, but I don't believe that's the way it has to be. Mine was not done with somebody else. He says, you know what? I actually did it this afternoon at home before I came over. I said, perfect, man. But we talked about this. And this isn't this guy's first time through the steps. I think it's the first time he was pushed a little bit to dig a little bit deeper into what it talks about in here. It also says at the end, right after the third step prayer, this was only a beginning, though, if honestly and humbly made, and believe me, I was humbled at this point. I mean, I'm ready to kill myself, but I finally make this decision to kind of go in an effect. Sometimes a very great one was felt at once. And I had that. It wasn't great, but I felt the effect. And I felt just a presence of a power greater than me, a higher power. And eventually I was able to say the word God, you know, the God of my understanding. When I hear God, I don't have the same judgments that I had when I showed up here. You know, I'm not positioned today to tell anybody that I work with, or anybody else for that matter, what the God of their understanding should be. That's not my role as a sponsor or a member of the program. But I can share my experience with awakening to a power greater than myself. And, you know, it's pretty all-encompassing for me. And my wife and I have some very interesting discussions sometimes about this. She's very much a spirit being, and she has her beliefs and values and her faith. And, you know, she's very active with her faith. Still a real active member of AA. And, you know, I think I just want us to share the spirit of a higher power and not get into the semantics of it. And that's what we've learned to do, by and large. You know, I'm going to relate a little story, and then we'll do the question and answer thing. And I think, and I've talked to my daughter about this. She's almost 28 now. But, you know, she had two parents that had somewhat varying views on a lot of things. And spirituality and God were one of them. I mean, she grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous, so she heard a lot of different angles on God. You know, and that was, believe me, her growing up in AA was certainly an asset. She could talk to our sponsees when they called and we weren't home. I mean, my wife had one of her girls call her and say, "You brainwashed your daughter. She told me the same thing you did." And she says, "She's just repeating what she hears us talking, man." You know, she's 14 years old, you know. But my mom passed away in like 2006, and Penny and my daughter really helped me out a lot through that process of settling the state and fixing up the house and all that. So, you know, there was a little bit of money left over at the end, and I said, "You know what, Brianna's always wanted to go to Normandy and Paris. Why don't you take her, Penny?" And her and another girlfriend and Penny's went. And they went to Normandy for 3 days. My daughter saw a art gallery, and she loves art. She's a writer, and she's one of those artsy people. And, you know, God, I love her. That's her gig. So she goes in this gallery, and it's just a one-woman place. The artist that owns it's there. She's got canvases up. Brianna can't buy any of this stuff. She's admiring her art. But she had these bookmarks she cut out of canvases she painted. So Brianna bought one and asked her to sign it on the back. Now, this is in a little town called Bayeux in Normandy. They go to Paris for a week. It's like 2007. 3 years later, in the spring, my wife's in New York City with her because she had to do an entrance interview for college, in a college there. And they went uptown, and Brianna's sitting out in front of the Metropolitan Museum of Art reading a book, and she's got this bookmark in her book. And it's kind of sticking out, you know, like when you're reading a book. And this gentleman in his 70s walks up to her with a French accent, speaks pretty good English though, and says, "Miss, may I ask you where you got that bookmark?" And Brianna said, "In France." And he says, "Well, I think my wife painted that." So my kid's pretty street smart too. And she says, "Oh yeah, what's her name?" It's written on the back. And this guy says, "Her name." And then he showed her his ID. And she called me up and she said, "Daddy, you are not going to believe what just happened to me." Now, she's how many thousands of miles from Normandy? And this dude shows up at that point when she's sitting on this bench in front of a museum. And I said, "BB, that's how the universe works. There was these, that's how I believe it works. Those energies were drawn together. And you were supposed to meet that guy at that moment. You know, I was supposed to meet Twiggy at that moment and Charlie at that moment. You know, and that's the God of my understanding working in my life." And I could tell other stories like that because I've had some things happen that are really cool. But that one just, I just smiled when she called me and says, "That's the universe, man." You know, whether or not, you know, we don't talk a whole lot about where her head is with this stuff. She's not a drunk. She doesn't have glaring defects like her father. You know, she's not real selfish or self-absorbed or resentful, or she doesn't lie. You know, she kind of gets on with life like I think we're intended to get on with life with. But, you know, that's my experience with those steps. And, you know, the whole God thing, I think we have to, for me, I have to treat that with my experience and let my guys figure it out, man. So thank you for your time tonight.
All right.
Thanks, Eric. So now we've got our question and answer portion. Does anybody have any questions for Eric on the topic this evening? Kevin's always good for that.
Oh, you guys are very quiet. Thanks, Eric. It was a great job. I really enjoy listening to you. When you're working, when you talked about the third step, you talked about the formal part of the third step where you kneel down with your sponsor and you say the third step prayer, and you kind of related how your naturalistic belief came and you did a third step. When the little bit that I understand about the way you approach this program is it's kind of free and up to the individual who does that third step. When you do the steps with somebody and then they get done with the 12th step, and we know that this is a continuing process, and somebody wants to go deeper into the program, how do you approach the third step with somebody who's been through the steps and has developed a God consciousness and wants to go a little deeper into themselves and this third 11th step, however you want to look at it?
I think that's a good question, and how I practice the steps continuing, and we'll get into this in a couple weeks. I'm a believer in 10, 11, and 12. And my guys, you know, we do this third step thing, they get through 9, and then it's 10, 11, and start looking for a new guy to work with. But for me, I know my awakening happened with actually 10 and 11, because the more I was able to take inventory in the present, okay, and correct that harm, if there was one, recognize it, correct it, talk to my sponsor about it, pray. But in my 11th, the 11th step practice is where my growth has come. And, you know, that chapter in the back, you know, the variety of religious experiences, I think that's what the name is. It talks about, my awakening has been of the educational variety. It's been experiential. But I can tell you today that with my guys, I say, you know what, for me, it's been an 11-step practice that's evolved and it's gotten longer. And I use the analogy of, you know what, I can hit snooze 3 times and do 10-minute drive by God and go into work and maybe pause when agitated or doubtful, maybe. But it's kind of like grinding your own coffee and brewing that coffee or putting it in a French press and pouring the coffee and sitting down and enjoying that cup of coffee or driving through the Hortons. You know, I reap what I sow. And when I put time into the 11th step, and, you know, I do 20 or 30 minutes every morning because I'm still a whack job. I need all the help I can get. I really do. And but that's where it's evolved for me, you know. And I know my wife, I mean, I observe stuff. She does her thing in her little home office, and I do mine and mine, you know. We're kind of up at the same time. And I know, I mean, we don't consciously talk about that, but I've been able to see hers evolve much more rapidly than mine. But she puts that effort in, too. And that's what I share with my guys. It's not so much the third step, because I'm making that decision, you know. And in 6 and 7, I'm doing a little bit of action. But my spiritual growth has come primarily in 11 and 12 with a kick from 10. I mean, I need to constantly look for them 4 things. And it, you know, and if I don't set myself up in the morning to go out and be useful and not think about me as soon as I am driving into work and maybe walk into something from third shift, I mean, you know, love or fear for me, that's, it can only go one of 2 ways today, you know, really. I mean, I keep it simple in that that's where I'm at. You know, I can either be in love and, you know, the light, or I can go to fear in its forms, and it can happen in an instant, you know. So I need that connectedness with the God of my understanding. If I'm got any chance of going through the day and being useful to another human being, whether or not they're in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you never know when that opportunity is going to arise. You know, a couple, 3 years ago, I was getting my hair cut. I walked in and the young lady was going, and I get a buzz cut, man, it's just 2 minutes and I'm out of there. And the young lady's crying. And I said, I don't know what just went on, and it's really none of my business, but why don't you just take a few deep breaths and just try to ease into this thing? And then she told me what happened. It was terrible. You know, the client she had prior to her said she was incompetent, blah, blah, blah. All this really ugly stuff. You know, and I looked that girl square in the eyes. I said, I can assure you of a couple things. Number one, you do not deserve to be treated like that. And number two, you're going to cut my hair just fine. And when I leave here, I'm going to give you a tip. You do not deserve to be treated that way. And she buzzed my hair, and I paid and gave her a tip and said, I hope you have a good rest of the day. And I walked out of there and I thought, you know, it wasn't uncommon. You know, that's not Eric Lyle from 35 years ago. And where did that come from? That came from you people talking to me about these steps and then putting them into practice. So that's where my spiritual awakening has evolved. And it's not like, and I don't really like telling stories like that, but I think it illustrates the point that that's the power that's here, and with our higher power. There's a transformation in me that I never thought possible. You know, it started with one, and it continues with 10, 11, and 12. So that's kind of the answer.
Thanks, Eric.
Can I sit down?